Pigeons in Isleworth. From a numbered shelf in the shed in his back garden, Peter Clemens takes one of his pigeons firmly by the legs. He smooths back the wings and presses the breast against his chest, so that the neck arches back slightly and the bird's amber eyes look up towards him. He scoops up the bird with two hands, then throws it skywards. There's a brief cacophony of beating feathers as it twists into the air, veering left and up over the roof of the house and out of sight. Peter's been keeping pigeons since he was about 11 years old. Him and his friend Mick Sutherland, who lives on the same street in Isleworth's Wirpool estate, where they both grew up, began with what they call strays. These strays were racing pigeons that had got too exhausted or frightened to find their way home and had taken refuge in the trees and river banks around the estate. If they managed to catch a stray, they would take it back home and keep it in a rabbit hutch, gradually acclimatising the pigeon to its new home. The two Bennetts, Charlie Silkin, Joey Need, Wainwright, me, you, Farley, what is that, eight? Peter starts counting of the names of the other children on this estate who also kept pigeons. Mick adds to the list, Robbie Clark, Sammy Davis, Les Burrows. According to Peter, there was 15 of them altogether. There were loads. From what they both remember, their estate was a close-knit community, and obviously with pigeon fanciers, there was an extra draw. Because I would come around to see Pete's pigeons, and he'd come around to see mine, then we'd go somewhere else to see theirs, and that's how it was. The 1960s were, in Mick's view, a boom time for pigeon fanciers. He puts this down partly to the experience of the Second World War. In the period immediately after the war, when rationing and bomb damage were a daily reality, keeping pigeons was a simple, accessible way of entertaining themselves. It was also part of a wider sense of natural world, and the urban world too. While Mick remembers how, as kids, they were able to recognise many wild birds, Peter recalls the surprising degree of freedom they had. We made go-karts, we went scrumping, we did everything, but you can't do none of that anymore. When he wasn't at school, Mick's mother would tell him to get out of the house and not come back till sunset. But she would always know if he had been around to see his friends' pigeons by the bloom of white powder on his jumper, which rubs off from the birds' feathers. Peter's sense of lost spirit of carefree play is linked to the impression that the passion for pigeons is dying off. Amongst the local pigeon club that Peter and Mick are a part of, there used to be 30 birds at each meeting. Now it's mostly just Peter and Mick. They still meet, however, in the Inverness Lodge on Boston Manor Road. Previously, the club met at the Coach and Horses in Isleworth, and before that, at the British Legion Club in Brentford. But it's not just an apparent lack of interest from younger generations that is affecting their sport or hobby, however you want to call it. Pigeon fanciers today face a range of new difficulties. One of these is the threat of infectious diseases. Paramyxovirus, a form of avian flu first detected in Britain in 1983, can cause partial paralysis of the wings and legs, as well as difficulty in breathing, runny eyes, vomiting and diarrhea. Young bird sickness, another viral infection, causes inflammation of the liver and intestines. Pigeon fanciers have suggested various causes for the outbreak, which began in the 1970s, including the abuse of cortisone, a form of hormonal doping that inhibits molting, reduces muscle inflammation, and improves a bird's mood. Mick believes air pollution is a part of the problem. Birds that breathe in dirty air over long flight distances are much more likely to get sick, so the theory goes. Apart from disease, there's at least one other bugbear affecting pigeons today, the peregrine falcon. Go on any peregrine webcam on one of the churches up in London and you'll see a nest box and a tray in front of it, and you'll see dozens and dozens of racing pigeon rings. For Peter, the attempt to reintroduce these birds of prey in urban areas is misguided. Peregrines are coastal birds. They don't belong in the towns. This wouldn't be the first time that the pigeons have been preyed on with official assistance from human beings. In the early 2000s, London Mayor Ken Livingstone introduced Harris Hawks to rid Trafalgar Square of its pigeons. Livingstone famously called the pigeons rats with wings. Selling pigeon feed in the square was banned and industrial vacuum cleaners brought in to suck up the grain that pro-pigeon campaigners continued to supply. The campaigners argued that the semi-domesticated birds depended on people for survival and formed an important part of the London scene, enjoyed by citizens and tourists alike. Many years earlier, in 1926, there had been another attempt to reduce the pigeon population. After the chief medical officer of the City of London called on authorities to deal with the nuisance of pigeon droppings, local boroughs were empowered to seize and destroy any house doves or pigeons necessary to abate such nuisance or prevent such damage. This was a far cry from the official attitudes in the 14th century, when the Bishop of London accused people who were harassing the pigeons around St. Paul's Cathedral of having a malignant spirit. But despite these difficulties, pigeon racing still attracts thousands of followers and also thousands of pounds in sales and prizes. At the British Homing World Annual Show in January 2020, a pigeon was auctioned for £20,000. Globally, racing pigeons have fetched close to £200,000. The Thames breeder Bio Race pays out over £17,000 to winners. But for Peter and Mick, it's not about the money. In fact, a typical pigeon fancier will spend hundreds on vaccinations, petrol mileage and electronic tags and clocks, and get little in return. Still, the entry costs are low enough to keep the sport attractive. For Mick, pigeons are the poor man's racehorse. Like racehorses, there's a huge amount of knowledge that goes into the breeding and training of pigeons. Peter says there are three keys to a winning bird. Keep them happy, keep them healthy, and keep them motivated. For people outside the sport, motivation is perhaps the most mysterious ingredient. Over the years, pigeon fanciers have evolved different systems for keeping their birds motivated, including the use of dummy hatchling eggs and various other cunning techniques. Peter and Mick use what is known as the widowhood system. Male and female birds are bred together and then split once they have raised their young. The split pairs are trained separately. The night before a race, they are reintroduced to each other for a few minutes before one of them is taken away. Eager to return to its mate, the selected pigeon is then transported with its fellow racers in carrying baskets that are loaded onto lorries. Some will travel as far as the south of France to reach the start point of the race, or the northern tip of Scotland, over 800 kilometres from Isleworth. Thousands of pigeons from different local federations are released en masse in what is known as a liberation. Then the race begins. The winner is the bird that gets home fastest, tapping in on the electronic reader installed in its shed. Peter's racing high point was winning the Bergerac to London race four times in a row. But even if your bird's not a winner, there's always the satisfaction, the excitement, and the adrenaline rush of seeing it come home. To see a pigeon banging here after 5 hours in the air racing like a lunatic, there's nothing better than that.